Make your weekend better at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Fresh craft beer, great vibes, and a tap room perfect for kicking back. Grab a pint, bring friends, and enjoy the weekend at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Go to BuenaConnectionBrewing.com. Hey everyone, welcome to Beverage Chronicles. I'm Gary Monteroso. This is where we kick back, pour something interesting, and talk about the stories behind what's in the glass. From craft beer to classic cocktails and everything in between, we're diving into the people, the passion, and the culture that makes the beverage world so fascinating. We're so happy you're here, and let's get into it. All right, let's talk about something that sounds small but actually has a big impact on beer, and that's what you call the beer. Because this is one of the biggest shifts happening right now. Breweries are rethinking style names. What used to be super technical, sometimes even a little gatekeepy, is now becoming way more flexible. And honestly, it kind of has to. Because here's the reality. Most people don't know what half these beer terms mean. You might brew a beautiful Kolsch, but if your customer has no clue what a Kolsch is, you've already lost them. Call that same beer a pale golden ale or an easy drinking lager style? Now you got their attention. It's the same beer, but a different outcome. And that's the whole idea here. Styled names aren't just descriptors anymore, they're positioning tools. That's how you connect with someone in about 2 seconds, standing in front of a tap list or a cooler, because that tiny little phrase, 1 to 3 words, can absolutely make or break a sale. Now here's where it gets a little bit tricky. There's no perfect answer. What works in one moment may flop in another, and that's why this whole thing is kind of unsolvable. But there are a few truths we can hang on to. First, most beer drinkers only know a handful of terms. We're talking stuff like light beer, IPA, lager, pilsner, and maybe hazy and maybe hoppy. Beyond that, it gets fuzzy fast. So when you start throwing around words like Schwarzbier or lambic, yeah, you might lose people. But, and this is important, that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes a little confusion actually helps. It sparks curiosity and it starts a conversation. You've got engagement. They're already invested. So yeah, making people work a little isn't always a bad move. But go too far the other way and you've got a different problem. If everything becomes easy drinking beer or crushable lager, now it's all just noise. Generic. Forgettable. Interchangeable. And worse, you might actually start weakening your brand. Because craft beer built its reputation on being different. More flavor, more character, a little more premium. If everyone starts chasing the same cheap and easy vibe, that edge starts to disappear. So, what's the move? Well, the advice floating around right now is keep it simple, meet people where they are, don't overcomplicate it. And yeah, that's mostly right, but not entirely. Because sometimes you should challenge your customer a little. That's how craft beer grew in the first place. Nobody knew what an IPA was at one point either. So really, this is a balancing act. Be clear, but not boring. Be approachable, but not generic. Be interesting, but not confusing. At the end of the day, most drinkers aren't beer nerds. They just know enough to find something they like. Your job, help them get there. And how you name that beer might be the difference between them grabbing it or walking right past. Okay, and now let's move on with our beer historian, Rachel Benkowski.
What is up, everybody? Rachel here, aka Brews with Beerkowski, and I am here to talk to you today about some beer history. I'm a certified Cicerone, and I am a historian, and today we're going to be talking about spontaneous fermentation, the wild magic of lambic. So, let's get nerdy. Imagine brewing a beer without adding any yeast. No lab cultures, no stainless steel precision, no control, just air. That is the ancient and still living tradition of lambic beer, one of the most culturally important and historically fragile beers in the world. Lambic comes from a very special place in the Seine Valley just outside of Brussels. For centuries, brewers here have relied on spontaneous fermentation, trusting the wild yeast and bacteria living in their environment to do the work. After brewing, hot wort is pumped into a large, shallow copper vessel called a kohlship. The brewery windows are opened, often only during the cold months of the year. Overnight, airborne microbes such as Brettanomyces, Lactobacillus, Pediococcus, and countless others settle into the liquid, and fermentation begins without any human direction. From there, lambic enters a long, slow transformation. The beer is transferred into oak barrels, sometimes reused wine barrels, where it ages for 1, 2, even 3 years or more. Over time, it develops layers of acidity, funk, fruit, oak, and earth. Nothing about lambic is rushed. Time is the primary ingredient. Young lambic is sharp and bracing, and old lambic is complex and mellow. Brewers blend them together to create gueuze, often called the champagne of beer, which is effervescent, dry, and deeply expressive. Add whole fruit like sour cherries or raspberries, and you get craque or framboise, fermented slowly and naturally, and never sweetened for convenience. The process is unpredictable, risky, expensive, and deeply tied to place. The microbes that create lambic exist nowhere else in the world, and that's why lambic truly cannot be replicated. You can attempt spontaneous fermentation anywhere, but only the Seine Valley produces lambic. It is beer as agriculture, beer as ecology, and beer as time. And lambic isn't just a beer style. It's a pillar of Belgian cultural identity. In Belgium, lambic is served with intention. In cafes around Brussels, gueuze is poured into tall, elegant glassware designed to showcase its effervescence and aroma. It's treated more like wine than beer. It's sipped slowly, discussed thoughtfully, paired with cheese, charcuterie, or a simple conversation. Breweries like Brasserie Cantillon aren't just producers. They are cultural stewards. Cantillon is part brewery, part museum, part living archive, preserving techniques that predate modern microbiology. In a world obsessed with control, they intentionally embrace chaos. And that is why lambic remains so important today. It resists industrialization, shortcuts, and uniformity. At a time when beer can be brewed anywhere, lambic reminds us that place still matters, that beer can be inseparable from land, climate, and tradition. Modern breweries across the world now experiment with spontaneous fermentation, and some do beautiful work, but lambic remains singular, not because others lack skill, but because you simply cannot copy an ecosystem. Lambic teaches us something essential about beer, about the craft itself. Beer doesn't always need precision. Sometimes it needs patience, and sometimes it needs trust. And sometimes the most meaningful flavors come from letting nature take the lead.
I happen to have seen this study on national news recently. I want to pass this along to you. And it took a look. These researchers took a look at beer, wine, and spirits drinkers, and they found that not all alcohol seems to carry the same risk, at least when it comes to low to moderate intake. The big picture still hasn't changed much. In general, drinking less is better for long-term health. But this research suggests that wine may behave differently from beer or spirits when it's consumed in smaller amounts. Now, this particular study followed more than 340,000 adults in the United Kingdom, and it looked at drinking habits alongside long-term health outcomes. The participants reported how often they drank and how much they typically consumed, and the researchers then grouped them by intake level. Heavy drinking was clearly associated with worse outcomes, including a higher risk of death from all causes, cancer and heart disease. That part of the picture was pretty straightforward. Where things got more interesting was at the low and moderate levels. People who drank beer, cider, or spirits in those ranges still showed a higher risk of death compared with people who drank very little or not at all. Wine, however, stood out as an exception. In this study, low to moderate wine consumption was linked with a lower risk of death than abstaining or drinking only occasionally. Researchers found that moderate wine drinkers had a lower risk of dying from heart-related causes than people who rarely drink. On the other hand, even small amounts of beer, cider, or spirits were tied to a slightly higher cardiovascular risk. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean wine is a magic bullet, and the researchers were careful not to suggest that, but it does point to some interesting differences between beverage types. One possible reason is that wine, especially red wine, contains compounds like polyphenols and antioxidants that have been studied for potential heart benefits. Wine is also more likely to be consumed with food, often in settings that line up with a generally healthier diet and lifestyle. Beer and spirits, by contrast, are more often consumed outside meals and may be part of a different overall pattern of drinking. That's really the key takeaway here. Alcohol doesn't exist in a vacuum. How much people drink matters, but so does what they drink, how they drink it, and the lifestyle around it. And even with these findings, the researchers emphasize that this was an observational study, so it can show patterns, not prove cause and effect. I kind of reluctantly released this last story. Sit tight for this one. Columbia Sportswear has released a beer called Nature Calls. And yes, it was brewed with water infused with bear scat. If you're not sure what scat is, look it up. The outdoor brand teamed up with Portland's Breakside Brewery to create the light lager as part of Columbia's Engineered for Whatever campaign, which is a pretty good way of saying we're doing something weird on purpose. The good news is nobody actually tossed actual bear poop into the brew kettle. The water was treated and made safe before brewing. So this is more of a wild marketing stunt than a sanitation disaster. Breakside says the beer has honey and huckleberry notes with a light, crisp finish that's meant to be easy drinking. The can features a bear and its pile of droppings right on the label because subtlety clearly was not the goal here. And while this may sound like one of the strangest beer stories ever, it's not the first time animal excrement has shown up in brewing history. Still, bear poop beer has to rank pretty high on the list of things nobody expected to hear today. If you are still with us after that story, we'd like to say thank you. Gary Monterosso here for Beverage Chronicles. We will be back next week. Take care, everyone.